Welcome to Radio Tony and the Passion Project. Join us live each week as we journey into the world of passion. Want to live life passionately? Finding your passion could be the difference between living life in the everyday and living life with meaning and purpose. Take these weekly lessons into life and business. Interact with your host, Tony Lontis, and her Passion Project facilitator, Peter Wallman, as we conduct a passion mapping exercise with Tony live on air. Passion is everything. And good afternoon, Australia, and good evening, America. You're listening to Tony Lontis live on Radio Tony and the Passion Project. And we have a wonderful guest today, all the way from the UK. But before I introduce her live to you, Dr. Sue Palmer-Conn is known as the divorce doctor. And she started out life as a teacher and took some time out to raise her family. And at that time, she was diagnosed with MS. And we'll talk to her a little bit about that later. While she worked to combat the serious physical nature of her symptoms, she enrolled in a psychology degree to combat the potential cognitive problems of an MS diagnosis. She loved studying, and as her symptoms minimized, she went on to complete a PhD in psychology. And from that, she was offered a junior lecturing position in a prestigious university. Unfortunately, her husband's ego was bruised at this time, now that she was more qualified than him and no longer financially dependent on him. They ended up getting a divorce in 2001, 2 weeks shy of her 50th birthday. She knew then that she wanted to earn enough money to keep the house and the lifestyle that she enjoyed. And within 5 years, she got a series of promotions and became a senior manager. Then in 2004, a wonderful man came back into her life after no contact for 33 years. And they've now been married for 16 years. She continued to work, and eventually, as part of her pre-retirement plan, she got into coaching and training and is now a master health and wellness coach and a certified divorce coach. So she helps couples consciously recouple if they decide to make up, or consciously decouple if they decide to break up. She has a wealth of experience in helping people with divorce and via her holistic health and wellness programs, and passion mapping has been incorporated into her journey, and she helps everyone on their divorce journey, pardon me. So good morning, Dr. Sue, and may I call you Dr. Sue, or would you prefer Sue?
Oh, just call me Sue.
Oh, I like the Dr. Sue, the doctor, divorce doctor. Welcome to the program, Sue. It's a delight to have you live with us here today, all the way from the UK. And I believe before Sue came on live with us today, she'd been in a 3.5 hour mastermind. So effectively, she's been awake most of the evening. So Sue, let's talk about you and your journey with divorce. I understand that you loved your roles in the university, and I'd first like to talk about what happened with your husband. I understand that you were relatively happy before you started to educate yourself and go along that track of lecturing. So how did that work out for you?
I never realised when we first got married that he wanted me to give up work to bring up the children. And this is, you know, one of the things that I really am passionate about now is working with couples to realise what their life path is going to be together.
Yes.
I mean, having said that, I love being at home with the boys.
Yes.
And I really took it on board and got involved in things that they were doing, you know, their sport and what have you. I became a rugby coach.
Wow. Yeah.
Never played rugby, but loved watching it.
Yeah.
So I used to coach the minis.
Yes.
And the boys went on to play at quite a high level.
Yes.
So when I went back into teaching, I loved what I was doing. I've always said I was, you know, I wanted to teach since I was knee high to a grasshopper. But at the same time, as you said, I was diagnosed with MS.
Yeah.
And
that must have been a huge shock, Sue.
Well, it was. It was. Yes. I mean, you know, completely out of the blue. I'd been really fit because as a teenager, I used to swim internationally, and then as an adult, I went back into master swimming and swam in the UK, the British, the European and the World Championships and stuff like that. Wow. And then all of a sudden, bang. But that didn't stop me. When I, in 1991, when I was 40, I decided that I would take up sport properly again. And I competed in the European Masters in the modern triathlon.
Oh, wow.
Which is running, swimming and shooting, because my hands were really shaky, my eyes were not good. So I took up pistol shooting, and I used to shoot the length of the garage.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's sort of...
Did that sport help, do you think, with the MS?
Oh, I'm sure it did. I'm sure it did.
Yeah.
You know, my neurologist wasn't very happy, but...
I can imagine.
But, you know, I never overdid it. I knew when I had to stop. I knew I had to rest.
Yes.
But, you know, as far as I'm concerned, I've beaten it. You know, it's always going to be there in the background. But
yes.
I have, unless I get really stressed or really hot.
Yes.
It doesn't affect me.
Yeah, you get to know your body, don't you? And I have to agree with you. Stress. I've got rheumatoid arthritis, so MS, rheumatoid arthritis. They all fall into that autoimmune disorder big group. And I agree with Sue. Stress is one of my big triggers for rheumatoid flares.
Yeah.
And it's about learning how to manage that, so that you stay healthy, because you can live with these diseases. They just take a bit of management, don't they, Sue?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You just need to recognise the symptoms and the signals and readapt.
Exactly. So we become very good at adapting our lives to manage the symptoms of the autoimmune disease that we have.
Yeah.
When the boys were a little bit older, you decided that you were going to do the psychology degree. Had you always been interested in psychology, or was it something that you sort of developed a love of later in life?
My first degree was in geochemistry, which is very black and white.
Wow. Yeah.
And I wanted something that was grey.
Yes.
No clear answers. And when I was doing my teaching qualifications, you did a little bit of psychology there, and I thought, oh, that'll do. But I got bitten by the bug.
Yes, because it's fascinating, isn't it? It's fascinating how your mind thinks and how it has a relationship to your body and how you have the power to change the way you think and view life. It's amazing,
isn't it? Absolutely. And people, you know, I always say to people that psychology is the only degree that you will use every day for the rest of your life.
Yes, absolutely.
But, you know, you don't have to be using it professionally. But when you're interacting, you're using psychology. When you're making decisions, you're using psychology.
Yeah.
So
did having done the psychology degree help you in the early stages of deciding that you were going to divorce? Because that's quite a major decision to come to that point where you decide that this is not working, this is not ever going to work, we need to consciously uncouple, are the lovely words that you use. It's hard to come to that decision, isn't it, Sue?
It is. It's really, really hard. When I got married, as far as I was concerned, it was for life.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But, we were married for 25 years when we got divorced. And, I got a PhD, he got a girlfriend, so.
Oh,
and then he got a PhD later, but he wasn't jealous.
Okay.
But the funny thing was, when he was writing it up,
yes,
because I'd started him off when we were still married I'd written a questionnaire for him.
Yes.
And when he was writing it up, he was sending me chapters, even though we were divorced.
Oh.
And being a natural teacher.
Yes.
I was just correcting it for him and doing it all right.
So you were able to stay relatively amicable through that divorce process?
Yeah, it's not worth falling out. You got two children. Yeah. We were going to have grandchildren.
Yes.
And although I didn't agree with what he'd done, I could understand.
It's incredibly hurtful for a woman to discover. Was it a younger girl, younger woman? So for middle-aged women our age, that's a real hit in the stomach, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Because, 50, you're hitting menopause.
Yes.
The boys had left, both gone to college and left home.
That empty nest syndrome.
Yeah. Empty nest syndrome. And, you get to the stage where you think, well, if we've got the future ahead of us now, planning retirement, planning all the adventures that we could have.
Yeah.
We were debt free.
Yeah.
And my parents were getting older. Uh-huh. So, I had the worry of them getting older. I had the worry, with the stress, was my MS going to flare up?
Yes.
Fortunately, it didn't.
Oh, well done.
Because, as you can tell, I'm so laid back that I'd be horizontal if I went any further back.
What a delightful thing to say. So you managed to negotiate your own divorce. And was it something that process triggered where you decided that you wanted to help others in the divorce process?
Absolutely. I mean, there was no such thing as divorce coaching when I was getting divorced.
No. Yeah.
But when I started work at the university, I found the only senior female academic.
Yes.
And I went to her and I said, what have I got to do to get to where you are in the shortest possible time?
Uh-huh.
And she said, well, you need to do this, that, you need to write this paper, you need to get on that committee, you need to do this and that. And one by one, I ticked them all off. So she was a fantastic mentor.
Yeah.
But, there's not many people that can find a mentor like that to help.
Yes, yes.
And, all my life, my raison d'etre has always been to make a difference, whether that's teaching or coaching or whatever I do. So, I just want to help women sort of find their purpose and passion and thrive in this new exciting life that they're creating.
Yes.
Because every end is only a new beginning.
Yeah.
So
So
the end of a marriage is the start of a new life.
And often it happens to women in our 40s and 50s. And I actually feel that is a wonderful time in a woman's life. I think that you're coming into an age where your child-raising years time has lessened. You never stop being a parent. But you also, there's a wisdom and knowledge that comes with being that age that I find incredibly satisfying. And it's a wonderful age to be, don't you think?
It's a wonderful age to discover yourself.
Yes, agreed.
You know, if I'm sure if I'd have been the sort of strong, independent woman that I am now when I was married, it would have been a very different relationship.
Yeah.
But I was, you know, I never wanted to outshine him or whatever. And so I sort of buried myself.
Yeah.
But now with Bill, he's the wind beneath my wings. You know, he's quite happy to push me up and up.
Yes, yes. It makes a huge, I too have a husband who is very supportive and encouraging. And it makes a huge difference. I've experienced all the rest, and now he allows me to do what I do and encourages me to do so. And it's amazing what you can accomplish when you have that support behind you. Mm. In thinking about the UK and the UK experience with COVID and the lockdown, have you seen the stress that's been causing in relationships?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Inquiries about divorce in the family law section has increased by something like 40%.
Oh, wow.
It's higher now than it is normally. The first Monday in January is normally the peak time.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Why do you think that is, Sue?
Christmas and New Year, people thrown together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, arguments over family and finance and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
The other peak is September. When the children go back to school.
Right.
But now, and this is true the world over.
Yes.
China found that there was at least, I think they said 50% increase in divorce inquiries or people starting divorces.
Wow. I have to agree that there is challenge to being locked down 24/7 in the same house, in the same space, even for ourselves, who I consider we have a good, strong relationship, but it was still challenging. So I can't imagine what it would be like in couples and families where things weren't good to begin with and now they're in lockdown together. Have you been able to help any of those couples come out the other side and decide to stay together, or have most of them decided that that's it?
No, it's about 50-50, the people that I'm working with.
Yes. Uh-huh.
But, you know, I'm up front with them and I say, all I want is the best decision for you. I'm not promoting divorce and I'm not promoting that you stay together, but let's work on it. And you know, I've just written an online course. Well, it's not quite finished yet, and it's called Marriage Makeover Mastermind.
Yes.
So that looks at communication, connection, compassion, you know, that sort of thing, because that's the thing that people are complaining about. We're disconnected. We're not communicating. Yes. Mm-hmm. We're arguing. We've lost the passion and intimacy.
Yeah.
And when people are thrown together, you know, they have three options, don't they? They turn towards, they turn away from, or they turn against.
Yes. And so, Sue, your course is going to be on your website, thedivorcedoctor.com?
It'll be on me or we, me-or-we. Because, you know, when they come through to the divorce doctor, they've made the decision.
Yes.
And,
you
know, with me or we, it's, you know, sort of me to we when they first start in.
Yes.
Me or we when they're deciding, and then when they've made the decision, it's either me and we or me on my own.
Yeah. How have you found using your passion mapping learnings? How have you used that in helping people with their divorce journey?
The clients that I've used it with so far, it's been absolutely transformational. They've come in sort of not knowing who they were. You know, yes. They're coming out of a marriage and not knowing who they were. And just in a few short weeks working on the passion map, they can see a new life journey. They can see all the positives. They value themselves.
Yes.
You know, they're building up their, well, refinding the qualities that were lost.
Yeah, yeah. It's a very powerful process for getting clarity around what you're passionate about and where you might want to go with your life, isn't it?
Absolutely, absolutely. I'm just getting into couples mapping and I can't wait because...
Oh, wow.
I think the best place to use this is when people are planning to get married, especially if it's a second marriage.
Yes.
You know, people over 50, the divorce rate is now round about 50%. With a second marriage, it goes up to about 65%.
Yeah.
And about 73% for a third marriage.
Yeah. So the stats are against you to begin with, aren't they?
Yeah. You think about how long people plan their wedding and how much money they spend on their wedding and how little time they plan their marriage.
And we should be having those discussions, shouldn't we, Sue? We should be making sure that those couples that are intending to get married have some of the tools that they'll need to navigate marriage, because it is tough. And there are tough times even for the best of couples. And it's seriously not something that you would want to ever go through, because they are painful processes, and it's never a fun thing to do or decide to do. It's a painful process. It's hard, and particularly if you're a woman in that middle-aged age bracket, it's going to be financially ruining for you in many instances, isn't it?
It could be. Yeah. I mean, getting divorced at 50.
Yes.
You've only got 10 to 15 years to build up a pension pot because if like me, you'd been a stay-at-home mum and then work very part-time, you don't have a pension in your own right.
That's right. And it becomes very difficult to decide and to work out how to build up enough money so that you can retire. But it doesn't look like you're going to retire anytime soon, Sue.
No.
You've got plenty of couples to work with. How has it been having this sort of wonderful career into your 70s?
I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah.
You know, I've found a new passion.
Yes. Yes.
You know, I've always loved teaching, and this to me is just an extension.
Yes.
You know, sort of helping people to find themselves, whereas at university I'm helping people to learn how to learn. Yes. Now I'm helping them to learn how to love themselves and others.
Yeah. It's a powerful thing to be able to do. So let me just clarify, when did you discover passion mapping?
I first heard about it a couple of years ago.
Uh-huh.
And of course, with Peter being in Australia and me being in the UK, ne'er the twain shall meet. So I kept saying, when's it going online? When's it going online?
Yes.
And eventually it went online and that was it. I just got hooked.
Yeah. And that was something that Peter and I very much wanted to explore, how we could change what Peter does from the face-to-face program that he delivers to this online mode. And increasingly, the more and more people that I'm talking to, the more and more they're saying that the process of getting themselves online, their programs online, their courses online, it opens them up to a worldwide market and doesn't limit them to a geographical location. So for you, Sue, being the divorce doctor, you can coach couples or singles from all over the world. It's just a matter of getting those time zones correct. And even that is not so much of an issue if you have something online that people can do in their own time zone. I think it's a wonderful new world, and I'm really excited for you to be able to do that work across the world.
Absolutely. You know, I've sort of cornered the market locally.
Yes.
The world is my oyster. Let's go global.
Absolutely. So for those of you listening live in the US, jump on to Sue's site, which is divorce-doctor.com, and I'll get Sue to repeat her other website in a moment. And even if you just want to reach out to Dr. Sue, she is on Facebook as The Divorce Doctor. She's on LinkedIn under Sue Palmer-Conn, Instagram Sue Palmer-Conn, and Twitter as well. And so, Sue, that second website that you mentioned, what was that again?
It's me-or-we.com.
me-or-we.com. And yep, that's where your courses for couples are going to be?
Yeah.
And what else? Tell me about what you envisage for the future.
I would love to have a course where people learn all how to handle divorce, how to be a credible witness, client for the lawyers, and then you know, sort of then move into a membership group where they get support from others going through the same thing, and you know, if they want one-to-one coaching, they can have one-to-one coaching, including passion mapping.
You offer all that already, the one-on-one coaching, don't you, Sue?
Yeah. At the moment, I'm doing one-to-one coaching and small group coaching.
Yeah. And that's for couples and singles all over the world?
Yeah.
Fantastic. So, Sue, you've got lots of things happening for you in the moment, and I can see a wonderful future with the work that you do and using passion maps. And what do you do in your downtime?
Well, when the pool's open, I go swimming.
Yes. Do you still do your? Do you still do any of the Masters swimming?
No. Unfortunately. I broke my shoulder several years ago, so I've lost the symmetry in the swimming.
Yeah,
and then 2 years ago, I had a knee replacement, so
that
put the kibosh on it. But I still swim for leisure.
And do you travel as well? Well, obviously, when none of us are traveling much at the moment, particularly Australia is completely locked down and closed to international travel, but when that eventually opens up, do you travel over the world, or do you like to try and stay in the UK?
I'm a globetrotter.
Yeah.
I've done 2 round the world lecture tours.
Oh, fantastic.
And
did you lecture on divorce in particular, or what did you lecture on?
No, it was more teaching and learning.
Yeah.
So that was, when was it, 2003 and 2008.
Uh-huh.
So I've been to some lovely places.
Uh-huh. Have you been to Australia?
I have. I've been there twice.
Oh, good. So we might see you here again.
Yeah. I nearly had a stepson living out in Australia.
Oh, right.
But his partner got homesick, so they came back home.
Yeah, it's kind of a long way, Australia, the land down under. And until we get those supersonic jets, it's a bit of a traverse across the world to get here, unfortunately.
But that's all part and parcel of it.
Beg your pardon?
That's all part and parcel of it.
It is. It is. It is indeed. So we are just about out of time, and I'm conscious that you have been up for so long. Peter usually pops back in at this time to say hello and goodbye, and I'll just wait and see if he's going to jump on and say good day.
Hi, Sue. I've just jumped on.
There you go.
Hiya.
Just jumped on. You amaze me the way you can get up in the middle of the night and be so coherent.
I agree.
I've not been to bed yet, so if I'd have been to bed, I'm not sure I would have been quite so coherent.
Yeah.
Oh, Sue, it has been a pleasure chatting to you this morning, and I love the work that you do, and a big congratulations on doing that work. Again, there's not a lot of people that do that, and the process of consciously recoupling it or deciding to consciously decouple, I'm sure will keep you very busy from now and into the future.
Yeah.
I'm going to let you go now. Again, I'm conscious that you've not been to bed yet. Thank you so much for coming on Radio Tony and the Passion Project, and
well,
I look forward
for
to seeing
me.
What you do in the future, Sue.
Thank you for having me, and enjoy the rest of your day.
Thanks, Sue. Bye for
Bye.
Now.
Bye, Sue.
Bye.
Hello, Peter.
Hello, Tony. We meet
again.
We meet again.
We do.
Yeah, I do find it very humbling, you know, that this work attracts so many extraordinarily accomplished people.
Yes, beautiful people doing amazing things.
Yeah, there's something about, you know, wishing the best for everybody else,
yes.
Which you need to do in this, you know, in this work. So
yeah,
So that was interesting.
What an inspiration she is.
Yeah, I think just about everybody can be, what can't they? I mean, you're an inspiration to me. And
oh, thank you.
You know, all of the people who you've interviewed, I think, are inspirational to me.
Yeah.
So
they're all uniquely special, and each have a unique and beautiful message that is them in a nutshell. So yeah.
Yeah, so isn't it all about just totally accepting them the way they are, you know, totally, and just speaking to the best in people.
Yes.
Or just connecting with the best in people.
Yeah.
So I think we're taught to judge far too much. Anyway,
exactly.
It's lovely.
And let age not be a barrier would be the other message.
Yeah, the other thing I was thinking was, you know, are people going to think that we only work with 70-year-old people?
No.
But we don't. We'll have a couple of 30-somethings next time. So
Yes. Because it is something, the passion mapping process is something that has something for everyone, no matter what your age. It will be helpful no matter what age, from 20 somethings to 70 somethings. You can all take something from the process that will give you that clarity about, oh, what am I going to do next, or what am I really passionate about?
Yeah, I mean, it's even worked for people in hospices.
Yeah.
You know, it's a great gift for people in hospices about to, you know, pass, that they get a sense of existential peace.
Definitely.
Before they die, you know, like that they've never had before.
Yeah.
So there's something just about this essence of who we are that's compellingly potent, I suppose.
Yeah.
So, you know, I just am continually humbled, not only by the people I am able to train, like Sue was.
Yes. Yes.
But even the, you know, the people that I work with, and people that they work with, and I love that at the essence, we're all so amazing.
Yes.
So magnificent in our essence, every single person.
Every human being has that particular specialness that is unique to them. And once you find that and work with that, life becomes amazing. It was good to see Sue's excitement when she said about being able to do the passion mapping training online versus having to do it face-to-face, and how much that meant to her to be able to do it online, which is part of the reason why you and I partnered together, was to work out how to go from face-to-face to having your programs online and available to that worldwide audience. And so far, it sounds like it's going to be working just fine and dandy.
Well, I hope so. I mean, in the last training, we had people signed up from, I think, 6 countries, was it 8 countries? Something like that. 1, 2, 3, 6, 7 countries.
So where are people showing interest from?
Well, from Africa, from Europe, from North America.
Yeah.
From Thailand. It's the only Asian.
Oh, ones. Wow.
New Zealand and Australia.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what they love is connecting with the diversity of people.
Yes.
And of course, when we create a community around, or a mini community for the people training.
Yeah.
There's such learning from people of different cultures and the way that they
definitely,
yeah. So, you know, one of the women was a black woman from the US.
Yes,
and so she helped give us an insight into the, you know, the black situation in the US.
Yes,
and so sort of almost like straight from the horse's mouth.
Yeah, yeah. My husband and I watched a Netflix series last night because we've been talking about the Black Lives Matters stuff that's happening across the world. And it's horrifying for me to think that these beautiful people have suffered so much with so much racism. And that particular series really brought home for me that it's a generation after generation after generation of racism across many governments. And, yeah, we need to change that.
Yeah. And I think one of the things I've learned through working with African-Americans or even Africans.
Yes, yes.
Is that they're generally much more embodied than us Westerners.
Okay.
So they're actually coming from a different place. They're coming from a more integrated, embodied place. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's a natural fear of that because there's a strength in that.
Yes.
And if you're, you know, if you are in the world of, you know, the intellect, primarily, then that can feel quite threatening.
Yes.
Because at some level, we're missing out on what they have.
Uh-huh.
So I think that causes a sense of oppression as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's been very interesting for me to observe that.
Yeah, yeah. I would agree. It triggered for me that I can't stand injustice. It embodies a feeling within my soul that hurts my soul. So when I see or hear injustice, it makes me angry and sad and all of those things and drives me to want to change those thoughts, to stamp out ignorance and to push for equality across all humanity, because at the end of the day, no matter what skin color we have, no matter what background we have, we're all still human. At the end of the day, we're all just humans.
And where did you get that belief from, Tony?
The belief.
I wish more people had that. that sense of belonging. Well, yeah, I mean, I do. I wish more people had that. I wish more people had a sense of men and women, we're all in this together.
Yes. Yes.
Rather than a suspicion of men or a suspicion of women.
Yeah. I actually feel that it's linked to educating yourself and questioning the things that we're told, the things that we see, and the things that people like to force on us. Questioning. So the president, let's say the president of the USA tweets bloody blah, and lots of people think that that is the way that you should think or speak. It's only people that are strong enough to say, hey, that's not okay. You cannot speak about other human beings in that way. And I really hope that there's a world reckoning coming that will show more people standing up and saying, no, that's not okay. No, it's not okay to be racist. No, it's not okay to treat women that way. No, it's not okay to treat men that way. No, it's not okay to treat children that way. That's the world though I want to see for my grandson.
Yeah. And how do you think they get that skill to stand up against everyone else?
I think that from my personal perspective, I think that for most people, it takes living through some sort of bad experience or trauma where you recognize that you need to do some healing. And I think the process of healing calls you into question things and ideas and ideals. And in that process, you suddenly start to wake up. And I guess that's the word. I'd like the world to wake up. I'd like them to realize that they're no better than anyone else. And the amount of money you have in the bank does not determine whether you're a good or a bad person. How powerful you are does not make you any better than the downtrodden person who just hasn't had the same opportunities as you had. If you gave each human being equal and adequate opportunity to live their best life, we would see a phenomenal earth and humanity. But as you and I know, not everything's equal. And until everything is equal or aimed at being equal, there will always be the need to rise up and speak out about injustice and inequality. And as we're seeing now, Black Lives Matter. Mm. Everyone's life matters, but in particular, the African American heritage is one of disadvantage. We need to change that.
And do you think religion's part of this? I mean, if you're a Christian, you're better than other people because you're going to go to heaven and they're all going to go to heaven.
I actually have a very strongly defined view on, let us call it, religious connotation to life. And that whole rhetoric that says, I'm better than you, that whole rhetoric that says you are an abominable person because you chose to have an abortion. You're an abominable person because you chose to have a divorce. No. You make the best decisions that you can make with the skills you have and the life that you've been given. And just because you choose to do those things does not fundamentally make you a bad person. Yeah?
Yeah.
What right
do people even have?
Absolutely. What right do you have to judge anyone?
Yeah.
What right do you have to say that anyone's truth is right or wrong? It's what they believe is real in their life, and they have the right to believe that. But they don't have the right to judge other people. I'm passionately opposed to judgment of any degree because I've been at the other end of it so often in my life, and it's not okay. people. It's not okay to judge. No matter what another person is doing, you don't have the right to judge them about that. Sure, you can ask them about that. You can engage with them. But we must always engage from a respectful point of view, which for me, I find easy because I don't judge anyone, or I try, like I will challenge myself on anything that I think I might be judging someone on. I that's an internal dialogue that I have with myself about, so why are you so hard on that person? Why are you thinking so negatively about that decision that someone's made? And that's my own personal, but not a lot of people I find do that. They're just like, oh, she did this, so we're not going to speak to her. Well, how about you find out why she had to make that decision in the first place? Show a bit of empathy, understanding, and compassion, and discover that it's not what you see on the surface, something far deeper, and something that they've had to work through to come up with that decision in the first place. Again, don't judge, or you're going to get my wrath.
Heaven help us. I mean, you've got an element on your passion map around that, haven't you?
I have, yeah, right in the center. Truth and justice are right in the center of my passion map. So as you can see, I'm liable to get quite vocal about judgment and racism and ignorance and injustice. It makes me quite fired up. And those scenes that we've been seeing out of the US where the treatment of our African American people, that's not okay. And that's a whole of country thing. And it's no different in Australia, the way that we've treated our Aboriginal and precious Indigenous people. You know, they are fundamentally the most spiritually grounded, beautiful people I've ever engaged with. And some of the things that we've subjected them to in Australia, again, not okay, not okay. Because they're no different from you and I, and we should treat them no differently.
Well, I'd argue they're not different. At some level, they're no different, but they do have a genuine spiritual connection with the earth.
Absolutely. It's a beautiful, precious thing to see and interact with, their spiritual beliefs and their culture. And we just don't see enough promotion or education. Again, see, it always comes back to education. It always comes back to taking the blinkers off and being, open to learning something different. Very, as Sue said in the interview, her whole life has been about education and teaching. It's such a powerful platform, and it's the most powerful platform for change.
Yeah, I think so.
And again, that's why I do what I do on radio, because it's a potential place to engage with people, educate, inspire, empower, and show them. And particularly with you and I collaboratively working on passion mapping, and again, that's education. That's educating yourself to rediscover what you're passionate about and making that the center of your life and living your best life.
Yeah, it sounds easy.
Yeah, it does sound easy. It's actually not that easy. Although Peter does make it easy. The passion mapping process is a little bit of work, but Peter, and I'm sure all the rest of the facilitators that do this work, are really good at drawing out those things that make you tick. And that's what passion is, the things that make you tick.
Yeah, yeah. Tony, I just want to say one thing about Indigenous people that I've discovered in this work. And I sort of have a great compassion for them because of it.
Yes.
And this has been an experience with a number of practitioners, I guess, in different parts of the world. North America, the Maori people.
Yes.
And Indigenous people here, is that, you know, during the passion mapping process, you unpack really all of the things that bring people alive. Yeah. And for Indigenous people, there's often two, almost like two selves.
Yes.
Two parts of the psyche. And one is about the conventional world and one is about their Indigenous world.
Yes.
And what happens when they're connecting those two and harmonizing them is they suddenly have a sense of the wholeness of their life rather than having these two parts of themselves almost at war inside themselves.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's extraordinary to just be working with someone in front of you who says, you know, Peter, this is the first time I've felt whole in my whole life.
Oh, wow.
And it is from that unpacking and then putting it back together.
Yeah.
And it's the same with us too, you know, like we unpack it and put it back together in a way that has its own integrity.
Yes.
And I don't know how it works. It's sort of magical in a way.
I agree. You don't think, I was unsure how it would work. And then when it just unfolds, so effortlessly, and then it's laid out in front of you, go, oh wow, oh okay. So in terms of that process for our Indigenous people, is it the power of reconnecting to their culture and their dream time and their rituals? Is that really important for them?
Absolutely. Yeah. And interesting enough, as you know, an image arises.
Yes.
And it's usually an Indigenous image that arises.
Yes. And they're powerful images, aren't they?
From their two halves of their, in a sense, their psyche.
Yeah.
So it's extraordinary, you know, like what can happen when you go underneath the psyche, because the psyche, I always say the mind can argue it's with itself, but the body can't.
Correct.
So if you enter the body mind through the body, you're going with the same intention, but you get a much better outcome than if you're going into the body mind through the mind.
Yeah.
So that's sort of part of the underpinning of the philosophy of passion mapping.
Yeah.
And all of the inner knowledge is there.
Yes.
You know, it's there. So, you know,
it's like drawing it out and putting it on paper so that you can have a physical reference point, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And when you, there is a sort of relationship between the parts of ourselves that is, again, magical.
Yes.
So, you know, when we worked together and you had your, you know, Radio Tony disc.
Yes.
It was clear where it went, you know, and it suddenly all of the rest of your life is in, you can see in relationship to Radio Tony.
Yes, yeah.
And you can see the rest of your life in relation to truth and justice.
Yes.
So there's something just comforting to know.
Very comforting.
This is me and this is how the different, I won't say parts of me, it's different expressions of me.
Yeah.
Relate to each other.
Yeah.
I just feel so blessed to do this work. It's amazing.
It is. And I can that connection with the people that you work with and then how they go out into the world and use passion maps for their own individual direction. And again, like Sue, who's discovered this whole work around divorce but using the passion mapping process in that work. And so you've got all of these facilitators across the world. We absolutely need to be training more and more of them so that the ripple effects of living life passionately go out across the world.
Well, I think that's that's what we're trying to do. And it's, you know, you're really helpful in terms of creating a central, central focus, I suppose, for the training program.
Yeah.
So as you know, that the people I was training were actually watching into our sessions.
Yes. Yeah.
We discussed them here on Radio Tony, but we've already done a session.
Yeah.
And I've introduced them to what was happening, and then they've watched a session, and then we've debriefed the session. So it's been a really fabulous learning experience, and I'm very, very appreciative, very grateful to you for allowing that to happen.
Oh, it's been great, equally great for me too. And knowing that I'm in a tiny part helping you train those wonderful facilitators, that's just awesome.
Yeah, so Sue is just in that last group. She's just she's sort of finishing off individually and now goes into couples.
Yeah.
And the couples work I just love. You know, it's like she was talking about consciously decoupling.
Yes.
But in a way, creating your own personal couples map is like, you know, it's like a conscious coupling.
Yes.
And it even starts with a simple thing, like what's the highest expression of who we can be together?
Yeah.
And I don't know any couples. I've never met a couple who's, well, I have actually a couple of people who've actually done that. They've sat down and said, look, what's the highest expression of who we are together?
Yeah.
And then when we start with that, it's a gift. It's a gift already.
Yeah.
Even though then the whole process is based on that. But it doesn't mean that it always works. You know, the other thing is it's a reality to it.
Yeah.
And certainly some people, when they try and get a couple's passion map together, they can't.
Yeah.
It doesn't knit. It doesn't
knit
energetically or spiritually or however you think about it. And they just shouldn't be together. They just,
Yeah. Hey, Peter, I think we're almost out of time.
Already?
I think we've overshot our mark today, and we were just getting into the whole conscious coupling and passion mapping. We'll leave that over for another day. Listen, wonderful audience, thank you for joining us today. Thank you, Peter. Thank you, Dr. Sue Palmer-Conn. We really must go, or the delightful Don will be booting us off. So thank you, everyone, for listening. Thank you, Peter, and over to you, Don.
Thanks, Tony.
Thank you for joining us on Radio Tony this week. Tune in next week for the next episode of Radio Tony and the Fashion Project. Live streaming each week, part of the journey. Discover your passion, learn about your purpose, and connect with Tony and Peter. This show is proudly brought to you by Passion Maps. https://www.passionmaps.com. That's www.passionmaps.com. Live passionately every day. Use the code TONY to register for your own online deep dive program with Passion Maps. See you all next week. Bye for now.